Well, I thought we read through the Christmas story, but, you know, Christmas is sort of, in a sense, it's supposed to be, remembering Jesus. And there's certain things that, hopes and different things that come up at Christmas time. And so I thought I would look at this passage in Hebrews, just a couple verses, where Hebrews just sort of gives seven things or a quick synopsis of Jesus. And I think if we look at these things about Jesus, maybe we could see how that relates to what's happening on Christmas and really see how that sort of opens Christmas up to us for the whole year. It's Hebrews chapter 1, and I'm just going to read verses 2 and 3, and then we'll take a look at them individually. In these last days, he has spoken to us in his Son, whom he appointed heir of all things, through whom also he made the world. And he is the radiance of his glory and the exact representation of his nature, and upholds all things by the word of his power. When he had made purification of sins, he sat down on the right hand of the majesty on high. That first thing that he says is, whom he appointed heir of all things. All that really means is that Jesus is the owner of everything. And so how that relates to us is that if he's the owner of everything, then we're not. And you may think, well, what is that? That doesn't really... Well, to not think of yourself as an owner of anything anymore would actually make a big difference in your life. And that's not something that you have to believe in Jesus or even God to see. I've seen numerous interviews with Bill Gates who, as far as I can see, is atheist, doesn't believe in God or Jesus or anything. Maybe I'm wrong, but it does. I don't think so. But I remember him saying that he had that realization that the things that he owns or that people think of as him owning, it's much more than what he needs. And he finally came to the realization that he's not an owner. What it is that things are owned by people and he's a steward of it. And so in his mind, he is saying that if we make this change from thinking of ourselves as an owner to a steward, that at least for him personally, it made a big difference in his life. And that's apart from God or anything else. So just making that difference in our mind will, but what difference does it make in thinking that Jesus is the owner? It would mean, as Bill Gates would say, we're stewards, but not necessarily stewards of just sort of people in general, but we're stewards of things that Jesus owns. And if you're a steward of things that Jesus owns, that means that we don't really have this concept. Well, we kind of do, I guess, in work. Maybe, you have the owner of the company. If you want to do well in the company, you need to think of where the owner is going and what the owner is doing, and then the position or the things that he's given you, he wants to see his things done. And so how is it by looking at Jesus as the owner of all things changes things? There's a little story in Matthew where someone comes to him and says, hey, I want to follow you. So he's making this distinction, I see there's something about Jesus and I want to follow you. And Jesus says to him, well, the Son of Man has nowhere to lay his head. And sometimes I've heard people tell me that means that like a commitment to follow Jesus, or that if we give up this idea of ownership and become stewards, then what that's meaning is we're making a vow of poverty or something like that. Or in our thoughts, we'll just think, well, then I just won't have anything if I do that. But that wasn't what Jesus was saying. And if you look at it in the context of what happens, that he says that directly after this other little story where he comes into town and there's one of the guys that's following him that he's a good friend with, Peter. And when he comes into town, they go to Peter's mother-in-law's house. And you can tell, he says, the Son of Man has nowhere to lay his head. What that means is that he doesn't own, so he doesn't have a place set aside for just him to go lay his head. But he's coming into town and they're going to this mother-in-law's house. In other words, he has a place to lay his head. It's just, it's under someone else's stewardship. And he gets there to the house and You can tell they go there with the expectation to be cared for and taken care of there at that house, but it turns out when they get there, she's sick, and she has a fever. And it says, so she can't do. She is maybe the steward that Jesus is looking for to come. She can't do that work. Jesus comes in. He touches her hand. He heals her. And then it says she gets up and immediately waits on them. And so what you see is that Jesus, as a human being, comes in, and what he needs is there, but he can't access it. It requires a miracle. He heals this lady, not himself, heals someone else. And then what she wants to do is to have him in there and help, but she can't. And because of that miracle, now she can get up and do it too. And so what's that picture that he's saying that changes things if you come to Jesus and you're going to follow him? And it's this sense of giving up this idea of ownership. What it is that when you're an owner, you feel like your goal is to become self-sufficient. But when you're following Jesus, he's saying, no, that the change is that now we're going to become dependent on each other. What that means is what we do on Christmas is we sort of give some gifts, right? And we receive some gifts. And he's saying, when you come to me, that's what you're buying into. You're not buying into the idea that I'm going to have enough money to go buy all my own socks and all my own stuff, and I'll just go on Amazon and buy everything that I have for myself, and then I will be set. He says, that's not the concept you're buying into. What you're buying into with me is that maybe you'll have a wish list or something like that, but you're buying into this idea that what you want is going to come from someone else and what they want is going to come from you. It's this idea of giving and receiving that you're sort of buying into. In other words, that Jesus is the owner, and what he did when he came down and you see the little baby is he created a situation where he needed one of us to hold him. God doesn't need us to hold him, but he created a situation where he did need us to hold him. He did need us to feed him. Jesus is the owner of all things. He has a place to lay his head, but he created a situation where he didn't have a place to lay his head so that Peter's mother-in-law would be able to give him a place to lay his head. In other words, that's part of what maybe people who are super wealthy and thinking of themselves as stewards, the one place that they're missing is you're not really doing that if it's a one-way thing. If you're the one that's always just providing something for everyone, what it is if you want that, the joy that really comes from that, then you need to create a situation where you need them as much as they need you. And that's what Jesus is doing as the owner, is even for himself. The idea of him coming down here on earth and becoming one of us is he's saying, this is what's most joyful in life. What's most joyful in life is a situation where your needs are being met by other people rather than yourself, and where you're meeting other people's needs. That if you can get yourself into that situation, that's where you'll find the most joy out of life. And that's sort of what we're touching on it with Christmas, with the giving and receiving of gifts. But it's much more in a real sense. And that goes completely against our way of thinking, that we think the most joy that we'll have is the more we become independent and not at all dependent on anyone else and can just sort of get everything on our own. And that was the perception that God had at the very beginning with Adam when he says it's not good for man to be alone. And then he created Eve. It's not really so much a male-female thing or a marriage thing. There's whatever people say about that may or may not be there, but to say that that's the totality of it. What he's saying is that, look, when you think of yourselves as an owner, you're just thinking of yourselves as an isolated person. And you're just thinking of yourself as, I'm going to take care of my needs. But he says, that's not going to be good for you to head down that road. And part of coming to Jesus, it's not about giving to become a good person or giving because you're so great so you can help other people. It has nothing to do with that. It's giving because you want to join into a life where someone's dependent on you and you're dependent on them. And that's what the church is supposed to be. That's why pictures of the church are as a body. There's a leg, an arm. In other words, that God gives us things to be stewards of, but he's never going to give us enough to be self-sufficient. And that's for our own good, because we'll be happier if we're interconnected and we're joined into this idea of giving and receiving. Now, the next thing that he says, which is sort of in line with that, he says, through whom also he made the world. And the world is cosmos. It's not just like the rocks and the trees. It's just everything, life. In other words, God didn't just create the world to have the world. He created the world for us to live in it, to have life together. And one of the things that you see on Christmas is that, you know, we give little gifts to each other, like some socks or, you know, I gave a little hat, I gave some little booties, and it's not like the person really needed those things, and then I get some things and I don't really need. And we understand that we're giving and receiving things that it's sort of a symbol of something. But what we really want is for the giving and receiving to actually mean something. We'd really like to be able to give someone something that they really want or they really need, and we'd really like to be able to receive something that we really want, that we really need. And that's an incredibly difficult, if not impossible, thing to do. You know, when you go around trying to find presents, that's the first thing that you realize on Christmas. It's almost impossible to give someone something that they need. It's hard to find, and it's very hard for someone to give you something that you need. You start noticing that. But we crave for that. That's why on Christmas we try and find maybe some family that we think of as poor or something, give them a turkey or something, or we like want to go to like a homeless shelter and give a meal, because we want to be involved in this giving and receiving, but we also just want it to actually mean something. And that's what was happening with Peter's mother-in-law and Jesus, is that was the work of God happening there in that situation, to give them a life where they're not independent of each other, but dependent on each other. And it required a miracle for that to all work, because it required it to be the work of God in order for that to happen. And that's what we sort of find on Christmas, is there is a strange thing that comes up where you come across different people, and there are these opportunities there to be able to help someone out in a real way. Sometimes it's not even like a gift of monetary thing. Sometimes it's just someone's lonely. You know, Christmas is an incredibly lonely time of the year. You can give someone something of real value just by being with them, inviting them over to your house, just including them into your family of giving and receiving. What he's saying is that, look, coming to me, it's not about becoming a good person and giving and taking care of this person, giving some hot dogs, going to all that can all happen. But what it's really about, if you really want to jump into it in this idea of stewardship, it's really about the joy that we can have by entering into these relationships. And in some cases, we're really going to have to change things in our life so that we can be like Jesus and create some perceived need in our life. It's not about creating those relationships necessarily by being the one who's always giving. Sometimes it's about being in that situation by, as we'll see, just adding some clarity. In other words, letting the need that you have to be seen. And if you're anything like me, that's probably the most difficult thing in life, is letting a need be seen, because we're so used to hiding our needs and not letting people see that. And part of the reason is we just have many, many years of people finding that out and using it against us, you know, or just hurt that's there because of it. But we'll get to this too. This is where Jesus is leading. Jesus is going to take care of that. That's part of God's work in what he's doing, is in spite of all of that that's there, giving us the joy of being dependent on each other and really needing each other. And that's what real relationships are all about. And that's where all the real joy is. Now let's look at the second one here. It says, he, Jesus, is the radiance of his glory, the exact representation of his nature. Radiance is the idea sort of when you look up at the sun, you feel like, okay, well, I shouldn't be looking at the sun, but I'm looking at the sun. I mean, let's say you're a little person, so you just don't know, so you're just staring at the sun. You know, it's that type of situation. You're just looking at the sun, and you're thinking, I'm looking at the sun. My mom said I shouldn't look at the sun, and it would be, but it turns out I'm fine looking at the sun. But you're not actually looking at the sun. You're looking in the direction of the sun, but what you're actually seeing is the radiance of the sun. People don't actually see, you can't actually see the sun. What you see is just the radiance of the sun. And from looking at the radiance of the sun, you can make judgments or different things about what the sun must be like or something. You make, you know, empirical deductions, maybe you might say, based on the radiance of the sun is basically what he's saying. In other words, he's saying that in terms of us being able to see God or see this work of God that God's doing, we really can't see it other than to see Jesus. That Jesus is what makes that clear. Jesus brings that clarity. And then he says, the exact representation of his nature. That's a little bit difficult to understand. He uses the same word in a different way in a few chapters later in chapter 3. He says, for we have become partakers of Christ if we hold fast to the beginning of our assurance, firm to the end. In other words, the assurance that we find with Jesus, it's the exact assurance that we have with God. In other words, when Jesus says to his disciples, I don't call you servants, I call you friends, that you have a certain assurance with Jesus if you're friends with him. He's saying, if you're friends with me, you're friends with God, basically. That whatever expectation I have on you, that's where you stand with God in terms of everything that God's doing. It brings clarity and then a different kind of assurance. And then what's the assurance he gives? He says, the next thing, and upholds all things by the word of his power. In other words, he's the one who makes all things happen. In other words, you know, I don't know. I don't even know why I'm going here, but you know, sometimes we feel like we're going to gain some clarity on what's going on in the world by maybe, you know, let's say Facebook. You look at Facebook. Hey, you're really not going to gain a whole lot of clarity. You know, we're supposed to be able to gain some clarity in what's going on by maybe looking at the news. You know, I don't know. We have all sorts of ways that we're trying. I guarantee you, you should just try it for a month. Just read through one of the Gospels about Jesus, and you'd be surprised at how much more clarity you'll have on what people are really like, what governments are really like, what's really going on in the world around us, what our relationships are like. You'd be surprised at how much clarity Jesus brings. And not to just to God, not just to the work of God, but to the life that God's created for all of us. He really gives clarity. But the problem is that we don't really want, like where you would most need the lights, you just don't have it. And that's sort of the clarity, I think, that Jesus brings to life, is that, like, no matter how hard you try, there's always something broken. And you could take that analogy farther, because down here, all the lights that should be up there in that area are just strewn all over the ground down here, because we just felt like we have so much extra light, we don't need this, and just throwing it all over. It's like we've got this big blaring thing there in the middle. So you'd have this, you know. One time, we talked about this before. Jesus, when he went to the cross, Roman, I don't know what he was, governor or whatever, the person in charge, the person making the decision on whether or not he was going to get sent to the cross or not. Jesus just didn't say anything to him, and the guy didn't really understand what was going on. He says, don't you realize that I have the power of life or death over you? And Jesus says, well, whatever power you do have was given to you by God. In other words, if you're looking for respect from Jesus in terms of you've got the power of life or death, you've got this, or you're the owner of this or that, you're not going to get that kind of respect. That's not the clarity you're going to gain by looking at Jesus. But there is a respect that's there that he gave to Pilate, because he said, the God of the entire universe has given you something. You're a steward of that. That's a whole nother kind of respect. You know, it's not that he's not, you know, he doesn't give me the respect that I deserve. Thank goodness he doesn't give us what we deserve. But there is a respect there. But it's a respect that's a respect that comes down to something that's been given to us. He says, when he had purification of sins, he sat down at the right hand of the majesty on high. Purification of sins is just, I don't know how to put it simply, just we've completely messed up and now he's made it all right, basically. And now he's sitting at the right hand of God, which is a place of respect and a place of honor. And what he's saying is that Jesus, he's talking about Jesus who became a human being. So he's now representative of us as a human. He's made all things right that we've messed up as humans. And now that he's made all things right, that purification of sins, he's now sitting in an uplifted relationship with God. He's risen above everything, and he's sitting there, and he has respect now because of that. So what's he saying? It is, look, coming to Jesus, what he has for us, it's not a list of do's or don'ts or that you're going to be a good person to this, but he does have for you in a miraculous way the offer of being able to be in relationships with people where there's a giving and a receiving, where there's even more than that, where there's real need that you have that's coming to you from someone else, and real need that you're giving to someone. Something real in those terms. He's giving you clarity. He's giving you an assurance, and the assurance is that he's going to make it happen. It's like this situation where he comes in and she's sick, she can't, but then the miracle happens. It's he's going to make it happen. And the best part is that, you know, oftentimes on Christmas, the older you get, you know, the more Christmas you start thinking of different friends and different things where, you know, something needs to get fixed. Or you can't really spend Christmas. Or sometimes you just sort of, you can spend Christmas, you know, but you just feel like this relationship needs to be lifted up somehow. And the only way it's going to get lifted up is to get lifted up apart from all the stuff that we've messed up in it. In other words, we'd love to have a give and take relationship, or, you know, giving and receiving relationship. We'd love to be dependent on it. But the problem is that when we enter into those, we're always disappointed because everyone always, we let people down, they let us down. How are we going to have that uplifted relationship? It happens because Jesus makes it so it just doesn't matter anymore. And I've had things that, you know, other pastors, other people, where it's like things have happened, and then all of a sudden I just come to a place where I just realize, actually, I'm fine, you know? I've been feeling kind of good holding on to this, and it's been feeling good to be angry, and it's been feeling kind of, but actually, that's not even been that joyful And so you start getting this thing, it's like you actually have to kind of tell yourself, you know what, I think I'm just going to let go of that. Because it's just not that much fun holding on to it. And I'm really fine right now. I'm okay. And that doesn't mean that it's not all going to happen all over again, but it's going to happen with anybody. And so what Jesus is offering is, look, in order for us to have this where we're dependent on each other and that kind of joy, we're going to need a miracle in order for something real to happen. It's just going to take a miracle. And it's not just a miracle for something good to happen, but it's also we're going to need a miracle to cover over all the messed up stuff that happens too. And that's part of the clarity that he brings, is that we're just not going to be able to provide what we need to that. We're also just not going to be able to pull it all together and not have any mistakes happen. In order for this to happen, it demands that it be a work of God. And he's saying, that work of God, you should be able to see. It's there for you. You can grab a hold of it, and it's not something you just grab a hold of at Christmas. It's something you grab a hold of by following Jesus. And it creates not a life of obligation to do this or to do that. He says, take my yoke. My yoke is light. It's really entering into his rest, which is sort of another thing that we think of for Christmas. It's like, oh, this is just a time to get a little break from work and rest. You know, what he's saying when he says enter into my rest is he's not saying that we don't ever do anything. He's just saying you're doing all the same things. You're just not doing it as work. You're doing it as rest now. In other words, the burden of it all happening, it's not all falling on you. The burden of not making a mistake, or it's falling on Jesus. And if we can grab a hold of that, and to the extent that we can see, have some assurance that Jesus is in fact providing those miracles of providing things and also covering over, as we see that empirically happening around us, it's not like you just say, oh, just relax a little bit and everyone's going to relax. You know, stop worrying, and just say, you don't just stop worrying. But what happens is as you live with Jesus and you see, no, he really is giving things when they need to happen. He really is covering over things. It allows you to just not stop and just sit down and watch TV, but to just grab a hold of all the relations, all the fun that's there with being involved with everyone without the weight of it all falling on you and just having the joy of it being a rest. And we can see little aspects of all these things on Christmas, but the point of Christmas is really to point us to Jesus and all the hopes and aspirations that we hope for this one little moment in life where we can have all of these little things of the giving and taking and being together with each other. He's saying, you can have that 24/7 with me. And a lot of it starts with, as this starts, seeing that he's the owner of all things. Let's pray. Jesus, we just want to recognize today that you are the owner and that you've patterned our life so that we need each other, and that's a good thing. And Lord, I just pray that you provide miraculous ways for us to meet the needs of our family and our friends around us, whatever those might be, and help us to just let them have the miracle of seeing you meeting our needs through them too. And Lord, help us to just take that assurance that you're making this happen. And please lift up all of our relationships and give us all some rest and just be able to live this life out in the joy that you have for us. Lord, we thank you for the forgiveness of our sins. And we just want to remember all these things. In your name, Jesus. Amen.